Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Buenos dias, world, from the San Diego Zoo Wildlife Alliance. I'm Marco Wendt.
And I'm Rick Schwartz. And we're your hosts for Season 3 of Amazing Wildlife, a show from iHeartRadio Ruby Studio and the global conservation organization behind the San Diego Zoo and the San Diego Zoo Safari Park.
Listen as we dive into the efforts here in San Diego and spotlight the heroes working worldwide to care for the species you know and love.
Listen to Amazing Wildlife on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to ACC Nation, featuring sports news and special guest interviews. Here's Will Ojanin and Jim Quist.
Jason Carmelo of BigUnderdog.com. Bracketology is our guest, and we're talking NCAA Sweet 16. We're going to go back and look at the entire bracket here first and talk about the first round pound, because there were an awful lot of upsets. Let's get right into that. Guys, let's just kind of bounce back and forth between each other, because I know everybody's got something that they want to throw into this mix. Some of the upsets that maybe were the most surprising to you guys.
Go ahead, Will. Sorry.
Okay. What I was going to talk about first real quick is the fact that we really went through the first round and we didn't have the huge amount of upsets. I think the biggest ones we had were Yale over Auburn and Oakland beating Kentucky. And usually we see a lot more than, I mean, we did have Grand Canyon too, but, and I kind of look back at this as like the conference tournaments having so many bid thieves kind of ruined it in a way. If you catch where I'm going, what are your thoughts on that, Jason?
Yeah, what happened was a lot of people got caught up in the storm of the major conferences having upsets, right? So a lot of the one seeds maybe didn't pull out all of their conference tournaments. Purdue didn't win, Carolina didn't win, right? So we got caught up in that. But what happened was in the strong tier of mid majors, Grand Canyon, Charleston, Samford, that range, and Duquesne was playing really well, that range of teams, they all survived. Those one seeds or the high two seeds, they all made it through. So with the bid stealing happening and with those strong mid-majors happening, we were going to have in that 12 and 13 range, those teams were going to be quality teams. And because of that, we had those upsets. The reality is those teams don't have the athleticism then necessarily to win 2 and 3 games. But when they put some early game pressure on teams, you know, you could feel it. You could see in the beginning of even the Kansas-Samford game, Kansas, you know, Samford wasn't really ready. They didn't think they could hang with them. And then they realized we're pretty good. We can score. We can score at Kansas on will. And, you know, they almost caught up. A cheap foul was called and they got beat. But you could feel that in the Grand Canyon thing. Like, you could see some of that. The 12 and 13 seeds were really good. Oakland was a quality team. Townsend and Golkey played very well, and you know, for Oakland. And that was a surprise that they beat Kentucky. But we talked about it for many years. When you look at teams' metrics, Kentucky had it and Baylor had it, right? And those, why these two teams aren't playing is they didn't guard well enough. Again, if your defensive efficiency is around 100 or 90, right, of all the teams in the country, you're not going to make it through four games to get to the Final Four.
I'm going to throw this in here right up front. I don't usually jump on refs, but I'm going to tell you right now, this has been the worst officiating season I have ever seen. And it goes further back than the tournament. But the tournament, some of the calls have just, or non-calls, have just been outrageous. And I think there is a need to restructure and to kick some people's butts out of reffing altogether. I think that it's been that bad and that egregious. Now, that being said, let's continue talking about basketball.
And, you know, the thing that kind of stood out to me when the whole bracket process went through is This year they put the play-in games on the 10 line, which shocked me because usually we always see them on the 11 line. And I just, and it goes back to the bid thieves and everything. This is like that 8, 9, 10, 11 line. It just felt like a jumbled mess to me this year.
Yeah, you got exactly right, Will. So the committee basically had their list, right, heading into the weekend. And then NC State finished the ACC. Oregon finished, the Pac-12. Duquesne finished the A-10. And you just kept seeing thieves take bids, right? Dayton was going to make it from the A-10 already. So then they had to say, where do we slot these teams? They aren't as good as some of these other teams we've had. So they took up all the 12s and all the 11s. And they pushed, again, like you said, they pushed the playing game to the 10s. So you had teams that a week ago, before Selection Sunday, were safely in the tournament playing in a play-in game, which is crazy. And the difference, but to your point, the difference at that point between Oregon and NC State and a Colorado State, I mean, it was very, very minimal at that point.
Yeah, and it is an interesting thing because when I look at the scheduling, I felt like they were done. Were done for the weekend. They just let an intern fill it in.
Yeah, I think the biggest misconception every single year with a selection committee is that the conference tournaments matter a lot. They don't. Now, if someone wins it, if NC State wins it, they got to get they got to get in the bracket. But things moving around, let's keep in mind here. Clemson got blown out by Boston College on a neutral court, which to most human beings would say, all right, that's going to push them from kind of a mid six seed to a seven seed. They're going to have to deal with the 7-10 game and a two in the next round. It didn't at all. They were done. The committee had selected the seeds of the teams they were going to be, and then they just slotted in kind of the conference tournament champions.
All right. Hey, before you go any further, Will, because I want to get this out of the way. We're going to talk about Virginia and Pitt.
Oh, boy.
Let's just jump right into this right now. Let's just get it out of the way. Virginia should not have been picked, but neither should have Pitt. And tell us why.
Pitt's really easy. They had a really good record down the stretch. They started to look like a team when you watch them play that kind of looks like a tournament team. The reality is this: Pitt's non-conference strength of schedule, which is a key component of the year, was 343 out of 362.
All right, there's one.
And the committee has been steadfast that if your non-conference strength of schedule, basically, so kind of for those people following, your schedule in November and December for the most part, for 2 months of the basketball season, was one of the worst in the country. The committee has always said, if you're not going to put the game ahead of your schedule, basically, if you're not going to promote the game and play good teams, if you are near the cut line, you will not make the tournament. That's happened throughout the years, and that happened to Pitt. It's simple as that. And the one major team they did play was Missouri, and they got beat.
Cha-ching, too.
And they were so far behind the eight ball in the season, they were going to have to play nearly perfect. They almost pulled it off, but that was the reason why. If they're non-conference strength of schedule, right, even they just kind of mixed around their schedule a little bit, was 242 instead of 342, they would have made the tournament.
Cha-ching almost only counts in horseshoes and hand grenades. And that is why Pitt was not in there. Let's look at Virginia for a second. I didn't feel like they should have been in there. But tell us why they were.
I'm having a hard time because I didn't have them in my bracket.
That's
I think
not
it was only like
time.
One person that did, to be
honest. Yeah, the reality is, you say, quad one wins. Well, they didn't really have many. They won at Clemson. They won a neutral court against Florida. But other than that, that was it. They had a solid win over Texas A&M team. But if you're talking about three wins over teams in the tournament, that's not typically enough. It's like, okay, well then look at the metrics. I mean, their defense obviously really, really solid throughout the year, and sure, they're built on that. And you tip your cap, and they're really well coached there. Offensively, they were a nightmare. I mean, they were painful to watch. And you say, well, it's not the eye tests, okay, but still efficiencies matter. and they didn't have it. I just believe that they were in the bracket for the last few weeks for the committee. And then they just said it didn't really matter how they played. They were just going to kind of make it. And for some reason, they believe that Virginia, and again, it's hard to know because if you look at a Seton Hall, a Providence, a St. John, so those teams had quality wins against quality teams that were more than three. They somehow felt that Virginia made it. I don't have a great answer for you other than they kind of checked all the boxes, right? They were kind of okay at everything in terms of their resume. They had no bad losses, nothing outside of quad two. But the reality is, I think just about everybody, all of us that kind of prognosticate and select, really feel Virginia should not have made it. And it's dangerous, right? It's dangerous to say they shouldn't have made it and look at the first game. Because when you start the tournament, all you can do is evaluate a team on Selection Sunday. You cannot, after that, what happens in the tournament is not necessarily a reflection of whether they should have made it or not. But man, it sure seemed that way with Virginia.
Scoring
12 points and a half.
So. I didn't even go off of that game, to be honest with you. I didn't go off that game at all. I was surprised, just almost blown away that they were selected to be in there, period. Because I just didn't think that they had performed up to snuff and shown that they were a team that belonged there. And offense, oh my gosh, Will has been listening to me go off left and right all season long about that offense. It sucked,
people. It was 204th in the country.
God,
204th.
They had three scores and nobody else.
Yeah. Okay. So enough of berating teams here. Let's start getting into a little more positive.
There's lots of positives. I mean, good. You got 25% of the Sweet 16.
Yeah. There we go. There we're right? talking. Okay. So, hey, we can do our SEC chant. Oh, I'm sorry. ACC. ACC. AC. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, I think the story of the tournament, at least from the ACC standpoint, is definitely NC State. I'm just going to bring Virginia back into this because had they hit an 80% free throw shooter, hit one free throw, we're not talking about NC State net right now. And we're probably talking about Kevin Keats looking for a new job. It's funny what luck will do to a person. But here they are.
Absolutely. Absolutely. He would have been fired the day after Selection Sunday. Right. That was a given to your point, Will. It's crazy watching NC State play. It's kind of like watching a baseball game and a team with a really good bullpen in a race to the seventh inning. Back, you know, the Royals used to have a really good bullpen. Right. And you face these teams. It's a race to the last 10 minutes. And once NC State gets to the last 10 minutes, DJ Burns gets the ball on the left block every single possession. And they're going to get points or a very good perimeter shot after double or even triple team at times, every single possession. You know, Keats calls them the closer, and it's just like that. It is crazy how they've just transformed the game and really turned the game into a 25 or 30 minute game. Because after that, if you're losing to them, you can ask Texas Tech, it's hard to catch up because they're either going to get a simple shot on the block or kick out wide open three.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's one of my favorite things about Burns is he's really agile for his size, but he's also a really, really good passer
Really good passer. I mean, he hasn't been forcing the ball, right? When he feels the double and triple, he kicks it out, and they have just enough perimeter shooting to make you pay. And they're playing with such confidence. I mean, part of it is it's just they're a very confident team right now. And there's, you know, Marquette is a fantastic team. Tyler Kolek is one of the best point guards in the country over the last couple of years. But the reality is that NC State has the athleticism to match up with them. It should be a fantastic game. And the way NC State's playing, there's really, they can beat anybody. Again, if they have a 4-point lead with 10 minutes to go, they're probably going to win because they get such good shots down the stretch. Their possessions are so sound and so organized. They're not turning the ball over, and they're getting good shots late.
Has anyone ever fired a coach who has taken a team, let's say, to the Elite Eight or even to a championship? Has anyone ever done that?
Oh, man.
that we can think of? Because I can't think of anybody that fits that.
I think so.
I wonder if we'll see our first.
I don't think so. You know, some of those Kansas State years, you could feel, you know, Bruce Weber would make the tournament, and, you know, they did a little bit, but you could just feel the K-State fans pulling away, saying, darn it, in some ways we wanted a new coach. But
we'll
but
just take the wins instead.
It's incredibly rare.
Okay. Such is life. You can always hope for stuff. You know, I hate to do it, but I also turn an eye toward Clemson, you know. Yeah. I mean, we've been talking about good old Brad departing for years, and he pulls a rabbit out of the hat. So,
it feels like this is December Clemson here.
They circled the wagons, right? I mean, they could not have looked worse against Boston College, right? They looked uninterested. Unathletic, right? They didn't have anything that day, no juice. And then all of a sudden they played a New Mexico team that just came off winning four really good games, played at a really high level in the Mountain West, you know, champion. Maybe they're a little tired, maybe not, but Clemson was just waiting for them, and they ambushed New Mexico again, a good New Mexico team. And then They shot the ball really well against Baylor, and they put pressure on Baylor's bigs to guard, and Baylor's bigs don't want to guard. And, you know, they had an advantage inside with their size and physicality. They were able to get the lead and just barely kind of hang on, right? They, like, Baylor was coming in a hurry late, but they were able to do it. And, you know, I think there was some moments of pause for Clemson fans when PJ Hall got that last foul, and he wondered, you know, is that it? But they were able to hold on.
I enjoyed that loss.
Yeah.
Right. That and listening to Charles Barkley finally stop bloviating over Auburn when Yale took them down. So, you know, it's been fun so far. What can I tell you?
Yeah.
Hey, Sweet 16. We've got a lot of teams in there, and as you mentioned to us, you know, it's an ACC sort of thing going on here. Not to jinx anybody, but goodness gracious, you know, we've got Duke, we've got North Carolina, we've got Clemson, we've got NC State. Who would have ever seen that coming? You kind of talked about that a little bit with us before we got on the air. I did not see any of that coming. I could have seen Duke and North Carolina.
Yeah.
But if somebody would have said, hey, is Clemson or NC State going to be in there? I'm going to, come on.
Yeah, I mean, you could make an argument that Duke has looked like the best team in the tournament so far. And now I understand.
You could make that argument.
Yeah, you're going to say, okay, so they played Vermont and James Madison. I tell you what, if you watch the James Madison-Wisconsin game, and you took the names off the jerseys, and you watched the, quote, 5-seed Wisconsin play that team, James Madison, out of 100 games, would beat Wisconsin 80 times. It was a complete athletic mismatch. James Madison went to Michigan State early in the season, and they beat Michigan State at Michigan State, too. So it was not a fluke. James Madison was like 30-3. And I understand they're coming off the high, and they may not play as well. But they, I mean, 93-55. And that was an incredible performance. And, you know, keep in mind, that spread wasn't all that high. You know, it was a 5 or 6 point spread. They were supposed to be in the game with that team, and it was never in doubt. When McCain plays like that, when he plays at that level, Duke is incredibly dangerous. Here's the thing. Houston's defense all year and all the metrics has been number one. Just lately, they are teetering, right? They've lost some players with injuries. You can tell it's almost like they have a really thin roster. They've started to not guard quite as well. They got in foul trouble against A&M, who's very athletic. And now Iowa State has kind of the number one defense. But there's some cracks showing in Houston. Now, you know, I saw Houston here in the Big 12 in person. They play so hard. They work so hard, but they're not a great scoring team. Can they play catch-up? If Duke can get out ahead of them, can they play catch-up? And as well as Houston's overall body of work is, their games recently, if you would have said that Texas A&M is going to score 95 points, I know they had an extra 5 minutes in overtime, but 95 points against that defense, you'd say, like, there's something wrong with Houston, right? So there is a chance for Duke. Now, Samson gets a whole week to prepare, right, for Duke. And so that's going to make them a little bit stronger. You're better off catching Houston on only the one-day rest. But Duke's got a really good shot. I mean, they're starting to put the pieces together. Some of the young players are starting to really play a lot better. And if they can get out ahead of Houston and make Houston try to play catch up, they're, you know, I think Duke's got a really good chance.
And you hit on the thing for me, it was McCain. We've talked about it, you know, on the podcast before. He has been playing like one of the best freshmen in the country. What he did against JMU is one of those like lightning in a bottle type games that you're just, you know, when you have those games, it's very special. I don't know if he's going to do something like that again, because I mean, Houston still has some really good guards that can defend well. I'm just curious, because I think this is the key to the game for me, is can Filipowski score? Can they get something from it, Mitchell? I just feel like the front court's going to be going to decide the game.
Yeah, I think you're right. You know, Gaines' game, that was about probably $100-$120 million game for him, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that tape will exist with NBA scouts, and they're going to be like, "Whoa!" I mean, that was a financial, you know, windfall for him. You're right, Will. It's going to come down to, can they get some easy baskets? Because when you play Houston, they guard you so well. They work so hard. And they force you to take good shots. Can you get some easy ones? Can you get some rebounds back in? Can you get a few steals and get out in transition? Because it's so hard to score against them when they set up their defense.
I'm with North Carolina. I'm very excited for this game against Alabama. I will admit, I put Alabama in my Final Four, my bracket.
Yep.
So for bracket's sake, I want to be right. But also for the ACC's sake, I want to be wrong. But I think what intrigues me about this matchup is there's going to be a lot of points scored in this game. The guard play is phenomenal. Sears is a really good scorer, but you got RJ Davis on the other side. And, you know, the Carolina's has played well defensively at times, but we've seen that if your defense slacks just a little bit, Alabama's putting up at least 90 on you.
Yes. Yes, I mean, it's a track meet. You know, we talked in years past about, you know, do you have a balance? Do you have enough of a balance? Miami last year was the one kind of blip in the whole. You have to have a little bit of both. You have to be in the top 50 efficiency. Miami somehow scooted through with a defense around 100, and that's where Alabama is. So of all the teams, again, there's 362 teams playing. Bama's defense is 101st. So they are not, with that athleticism that they have, and those prospects that they have, they are not interested in guarding. They're trying to trade you 3 for 2. And Carolina statistically matches up quite well with them, because Carolina is balanced and Carolina can absolutely score, and Carolina is fine getting in a track meet and fine going with it and fine trying to win 89-86. Most teams that play Alabama can't do that. Grand Canyon couldn't do that. So I think Carolina is in an advantageous spot here, because I think when it comes down to it, Bama does not have the horsepower to consistently guard. And I really believe Carolina is going to win that game.
It looks like a team in that matchup. I'm also intrigued by that matchup. And honestly, every time I look at Alabama, I always see a dangerous team. In this particular instance, I think what Carolina needs to do is just come out and just pound the crap out of them early. Get those points up, deflate them, take the wind out.
That's right. This is a really big game for Hubert Davis. Like, this is one of those games, because Nate Oss is a fantastic coach. Like him or not like him, you know, his style of play, it's, you know, math and metrics and all those things. It makes a lot of sense. Don't shoot long twos, either shoot at the rim or shoot threes. Makes sense. But this is one of those, the only real, like, if you put the rosters together, Carolina needs to win. Carolina should win. Sears and Davis, like you said, offset each other. The reality is this, is Oates going to outcoach Davis that much to make up for it? That's the concern. And because when you look at all of the features of the teams and all of the data that we have across the board, Carolina is steadier in both, right? So And it's going to be one of those that if Carolina loses this game, he's going to feel that pressure again of, hey, you know, he should, you know, this was a Final Four type team, or at least an Elite Eight team. And, you know, they underachieved a little bit. He'll feel that a little bit.
Yeah, the talk will start again. Anyway.
Yeah, it's, I mean, I think the thing that stands out with Carolina with me is sometimes when players reclassify, they look a little lost. That has not been the case with Elliott Cadeau. I think he's played very mature for his situation. And if he doesn't have that deer in the headlights look, I think Carolina is going to have a real, real good game on Thursday night.
Yeah. And that's a really good point. Well, also they've been getting steady play from a really experienced player like Cormac Ryan. You know, that 13 or 14 points they know they're going to get from him, that's really been reliable. He was up and down and up and down early in the year. And he's kind of settled into a nice, even player to complement some of the really athletic guys. So
I want to step out of the ACC just for a moment, because I think one of the other Sweet 16 matchups that intrigues me, and I definitely want to hear from you on this, is Purdue-Gonzaga. Yeah. At Gonzaga, I didn't think they were going to be in real danger in their 5-12 game. And I was really impressed with the way they beat Kansas. Yes, I know Kansas is banged up, and I thought they would win. And Purdue faced little to no resistance. I was thoroughly impressed with what they did to Utah State. So what are your overall thoughts on that game?
You know, it's interesting. When you spend time, I spent some time in the preseason Big Ten media session, and then some time at the Big Ten tournament up in your country, Will. And when you're around Matt Painter, you're around one of very few coaches in the entire country that could lose to a 16 seed and win the national title the next year. He has that about him. Bennett had that about him as well. You have to be a top 10 coach, a top 10 motivator to do that. So Purdue has that. Here's the other thing with Purdue. Everybody wants to say, well, they got kind of the same guards and they got Edie. So from afar, Purdue looks like the same basketball team as the last couple of years. So here's why they're not. This is why Purdue is different this year. 2 years ago when they lost to St. Peter's, we talked about it back then. Their defense was was 85 or 90. So they didn't guard as well as everybody thought they were, especially having a big guy. This year, they're 20. That's different, right? Last year, you think, okay, it's the same players. Last year, their three-point shooting, and this is what Painter knew. He knew at the tournament time his guards couldn't shoot the ball. Their three-point shooting last year for Purdue was 276 in the country. This year, it's second. They can shoot. Obviously, they have Edie inside. And then he realized, I've got guards that were freshmen last year. They're a little more experienced. What else do I need? He got Lance Jones, who's one of the most athletic players in the Big Ten. He's kind of a slasher, a guarder defensively. And he's going to put in 12 to 14 points a game, and he can guard a really athletic wing. He might be the one guarding Nembhard for Gonzaga. So when you say we can shoot the ball better from the perimeter, we've got Lance Jones to help us defend and shoot some threes. And then we also are going to defend inherently better because of Jones and such. And we still have Edie. Purdue's different. And I see Purdue as a team. Selfishly, I want to see Purdue play Tennessee. Because I think those are two of the best, if not the two best teams in the country. UConn's obviously playing at a really high clip that has to be involved in that conversation as well. But Purdue can absolutely have everything in the parts and pieces. If you were buying stock and if you were buying odds, it didn't make sense that Purdue wasn't higher. They're behind some teams that they shouldn't be behind only because of the persona that it's the same thing with Purdue. Not buying it. Take Purdue.
Agreed.
Painter is Jason's boy.
I love Matt Painter. I think he's a fantastic coach, and I think that he has not quite yet figured out how to piece the roster together. Right, he always had one deficiency every year. He finally this year has kind of put it together, and we'll see if they can get it done.
Yeah, NC State and Marquette. I find that an intriguing matchup.
Yeah, Tyler Kolek, he's fantastic. Marquette was banged up at the end of the year. Kolick was hurt. So if you haven't seen Kolick play, he is a traditional old school point guard. He is a distributor. He'll make the shots down the stretch when you need him. Not overly athletic, but an incredible collegiate point guard. And they sat him out of the Big East tournament because they were worried. You know, he was kind of nursing a shoulder injury. He's back now. They're at a full go. And listen, Shaka Smart hasn't made, you know, a run like this since VCU in 2014. He was feeling the pressure. You could see him on the sidelines feeling the pressure when Colorado was charging. But as good as Kolick is from a point guard standpoint, and they've got some good players as well, there's no reason NC State can't keep the game close. Like, this is not a Purdue. This is not a UConn. They've got a good draw, NC State, and a really good opportunity to keep advancing. I believe, you know, truly, I believe all of the ACC schools match up pretty well. Clemson against Arizona. Arizona is big and physical, and so is Clemson. And so it's going to be a war inside, right? PJ Hall is going to earn that money inside. And I do believe that Clemson can play with an Arizona team as well. None of the ACC schools need to come into this kind of intimidated. Listen, if you're San Diego State and you got UConn up in Boston, like, that's going to be a tough go. They could do it. San Diego State's got pedigree. Lede's been really good. But all the ACC schools have a chance.
Yeah, and let me, I just wanted to add in the matchup there. PJ Hall, if he's going to be, you know, hanging out behind the perimeter, I think it's going to be a tough ask for Umar Ballo to guard him.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, Arizona likes to bully people inside. Mm-hmm. And that's not that easy to do against a Clemson team that especially lately has been playing really, really hard. Baylor tried to go a little more finesse and Clemson wasn't having it. Clemson worked really hard. They rebounded really well. They forced the ball inside. They built the lead and then they held on.
A question about Shaka Smart real quickly. Do you see him going anywhere anytime soon?
I don't think so. I think he knows, you know, VCU is a fun spot, right? He was the underdog and the energy and all those things. He went to one of the worst schools he could possibly go to. Not because Texas isn't a great school, a great program, a great university. It's built because it was a big, giant monster. It's the complete opposite of what he wants to be, a hardworking underdog grinder, right? So it never worked. It almost worked at times with Texas, but it wasn't the right fit for him. And he knew that eventually and got out. Marquette's kind of in the sweet spot. It's got the Big East backing. It's got the resources it needs, but it's not the UConn. It's not the quote, you know, the really, really high name brand. So he always can feel a bit like an underdog. So I think it's a nice sweet spot for him. I think he stays there for quite a while.
Reason I asked that question is Louisville looking for anybody.
Yeah,
I'm expecting my phone call at any moment now. seems that desperate at times. But I look at him and I'm going, this is a guy that, to me, because I've watched him since VCU, which is in my backyard. And I've just always been impressed by his abilities. He just had this vision. And I'm glad your point about him being at Marquette, perfect fit, good place to be. And he'll make an impression there. But I just wonder how long it's going to be before somebody else comes knocking and says, hey, here's an opportunity. And I was thinking, you know, he might be a good fit for Louisville, maybe.
I think... It just some of the stuff I've read and some of the interviews I've seen with him, I don't know him. I've never interviewed him. I think he's at a really sweet spot in his career. I think he knows he chased it. And he was able to get and settle in. I think he's in the right spot. They talked about, you know, maybe this Charleston coach. So we'll see what, you know, Louisville comes up with. but they've swung and missed quite a bit. For a program like that, you know, from afar, it's kind of hard to see because it's a very proud program, as obviously your listeners know.
Yeah, and I'll catch a lot of blowback for this, but they got some issues surrounding that program that need to be cleaned up and have not been and probably never will be, and that's part of the problem right there. That will continue to haunt their athletic programs because they're not willing to face up to something that's right there in front of them. question for you. We talked briefly about this prior to going on the net.
Yeah.
This has become a topic of, hey, let's reexamine the net. Maybe we need to change things. Maybe we need to upgrade things or whatever. But there's all kinds of alternatives and extras that we can throw in here. Will pointed out, rightfully so, this is only a small portion of the tools that you should be using. It's not the only tool that you should be using. Thoughts on maybe upgrading or changing or reconfiguring the net?
I think in the next 2 years, it will absolutely be altered. The formula that creates the net, because there's so much publicity brought this year to the attention, especially of the Big 12 net rankings versus their non-conference strength of schedule, right? So if you talk to a Pitt fan and you say, well, hey, like, I'm sorry you didn't make it, but you didn't make it because your non-conference strength of schedule was 343, right? They're going to say, well, look at the whole Big 12. They didn't play anybody, and they made up for all of it in the strength of schedule in the conference. And you say, absolutely. But then you take a look back and you're like, all right, like, how did some of these teams do it? How did BYU stay in the top 15 of the net the entire season? Like, you watch them play and you're like, yeah, they're solid, but they're not a 15th team in the country. It was because they completely obliterated a really weak non-conference schedule. I mean, they were beating teams by 25, 30, and 35 at a regular clip early in the season. So then as a sport, you have to think about this. If the margin of victory, Iowa State did this early, and then they prove their merit now. But if the margin of victory is that heavily weighed in the formula, does it really matter if you win by 18 versus 30? Like, does it really matter? And the net, it absolutely does. You watch the end of games now. Coaches keep their starters in the entire game in the regular season and conference tournaments, because if they put their maybe the last 20 seconds you might sub. It used to be last 2.5 minutes you'd sub. If your starters come out and your bench comes in and they give up an 8-0 run at the end, that literally affects your net ranking the next morning. And so if you think about it, is that truly how the sport should be run? Does it really matter if you win by 18 or 30? No. No, so there needs to be a cap on the margin of victory. We need to be kind of reasonable about it. You know, there's lots of metrics. You know, Eric Haslam does a really good job with his metrics. Bart Torvik does. There's a lot of people that cut it off that say enough is enough, right? They've got the game in hand. Let's not reward someone for pushing it up to 35 or 40. That's ridiculous. And I think people are going to take a look at this and realize that there's no way that BYU should have been ranked that high, right? There's no way that a St. Mary's, who lost to Missouri State and Weber State, should have been ranked that high ultimately. So we're going to have to reevaluate it, because those teams, that's not aligning. And I think it's going to happen. And I don't know that they'll get it done in time for next year. They will get it done in time, I think, for the following year.
Interesting.
What about the quad system? This is one of my things that I see is, yeah, we need to have like the bad teams separated. But I just wonder if there needs to be like, I know they use like quad 1A and stuff like that, but just make it more like knowledgeable, like make these games against the better teams, you know, stand out more. Cause I mean, you could be Houston at home and then go and beat Samford on the road, and they would both count as quad 1 wins.
Yeah.
And I just wonder if maybe there needs to be like a shortening of like quad 1 or something.
Yeah, I think you're right. My favorite part about the net system is rewarding teams that can win on the road. So to your point, Will, so you know, for those listening, you know, if you hear quad one win, that is if you beat a top 30 team in the net at home, it's a top 50 team in a neutral court, or a top 75 team on the road. So I'd love the fact that it rewards teams that get road victories. But to your point, Will, I completely 100% agree that the top of the system, the quote quad one or the top tier win, needs to be subdivided. You know, even if we've got to have more visibility to the top half kind of quad one wins versus the bottom half, because you get to the bubble and people post graphics that say, you know, their quad win is, you know, so-and-so. Well, yeah, you can win quad one games, but none of those teams are going to make the tournament. You know, for example, You go to Virginia Tech, like you were saying, well, you go to Virginia Tech and win. Like, what good's that going to do? This is why I thought Colorado might miss the tournament, even though they had good statistical metrics. The only team they beat in their entire season that made the tournament and from an at-large was they beat Washington State twice. That's it. And so we get into, well, you know, they had a couple, you know, but they beat Oregon, who snuck in eventually, right? They beat Oregon and Washington, and those were quad one wins. So everything looked about right from afar, but when you really zoomed in, they didn't have kind of the depth of the profile. So you're 100% right. We've got to bring up, you know, to the forefront, the really top tier wins, which is, you know, that was always my fear. And I'm sidetracking here, but with Auburn. Auburn went into the SEC tournament with one quadrant one win. One. And everybody, but their metrics, because they just kill bad teams, their metrics had them the top four, top five, top six in the country, depending on what metric you looked at. And I just kept saying, yeah, like, I get that. But I also get the fact that they didn't beat the really good teams. And you could feel that even when they played Yale. They had deficiencies. And when games were close, they didn't have the confidence because they didn't beat good teams. And although Yale wasn't great, they didn't have kind of that basis under them of winning a lot of those close, tight games against tournament caliber teams.
Interesting. This conversation is going to have to be picked up and expanded further. But we've got games coming up here in the next couple of days. Sweet 16, ACC's got 25%. Hey,
yeah.
ACC.
Right? You guys should be waving the flag. And it's been a banner. I mean, it's been a banner postseason. I think they all, like I said, I think they all still have really good chances. I'm going to sneak in one more game to talk about is Creighton, Tennessee.
Try to get that Tennessee in there.
Yeah. I mean, Tennessee's really interesting and I find them, you know, fascinating because they've been so heavily reliant on defense over the last 3 or 4 years under Rick Barnes. They can never really have that go-to score to offset the defense. Well, insert Dalton Kanect, who went from a Northern Colorado player last year to a first-team All-American this year and probably a lottery pick. I mean, it's just a crazy ascent to stardom, a well-deserved ascent to a stardom. And Tennessee at one stretch was, you know, 3 for 20 shooting threes, and they were able to still hang on and win a tournament game. Mm-hmm. And that is a testament to why, you know, your listeners might be tired, but like, that's why you need to have both legs of the stool to lean on offense and defense, because there's going to be one game in your 4-game stretch to make a Final Four where you don't shoot the ball well. And can you get stops? And I found Tennessee, you know, it really interesting. Insert a Creighton team who can really score, especially inside. Their best, it's crazy with Creighton. Their best players are Shireman and Kalkbrenner at inside, their forwards and center, but they shoot all threes. So they shoot a tremendous amount of threes. They go down and they shoot the three and then they try to tip it back in, rinse and repeat. So it's going to be a really interesting game because Tennessee just doesn't give you easy points early. So it's really fascinating of style. Tennessee wants to be kind of methodical and slow at times and really grind it out. And Creighton wants to push and shoot a bunch of threes. So that should be a really, really good game Friday.
So success in basketball, or any sport for that matter, but we'll say basketball in this particular instance, and business as well, is usually dependent on a three-legged stool. In this particular instance, you got to have offense, you got to have defense, and you got to have a bench. Yes. And if all three of them aren't equal, it's going to tilt. So,
yeah, ask Kansas, right?
That's right.
Look, I don't understand how Kansas ran out of basketball players. I don't understand it. That will forever be a question for those of us that follow the game. But somehow they did. And they were preseason. They were the preseason top team in the country. And once McCullough got hurt, they didn't have it. Didn't have it at all.
It's amazing. Yeah, that's something that people need to – that's how books get written. That's all I can say is that you can look at something like that and you can write a book on that, that you can have all kinds of conjecture in there. But, man, it does make you wonder why something which seems so simple had such a great impact.
Yep.
So, I don't know. Hey, Jason – appreciate you being on the show as always, having a good talk about NCAA Sweet 16 right before we ease into it, man. It's going to be a wild weekend. That's all I can say.
Thanks for letting me talk about the ACC Invitational over the next couple days. This was a lot of fun. Thanks so much for having me, guys.
You are the man. Big Underdog, the bracketologist. Make sure you check him out, bigunderdog.com. And also follow him, because there's a lot of great information there. And he shares a lot of information on social media as well, talking about how the game's going. And don't, you know, if you're from Pitt, don't give him grief. I mean, seriously, come on, people.
Schedule better. Yeah, that's all I can tell you.
Learn from mistakes and grow and be better. It's just that simple. Jason Carmelo, thank you for joining us on ACC Nation.
Thanks for listening to ACC Nation. Be sure to listen, like, and subscribe to our podcast, radio, and YouTube channels by visiting accnation.net. Follow us on Instagram, X, Facebook, Mastodon, Threads, Blue Sky, and Reddit at ACC Nation.
ACC Nation.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Buenos dias, world, from the San Diego Zoo Wildlife Alliance. I'm Marco Wendt.
And I'm Rick Schwartz. And we're your hosts for Season 3 of Amazing Wildlife, a show from iHeartRadio Ruby Studio and the global conservation organization behind the San Diego Zoo and the San Diego Zoo Safari Park.
Listen as we dive into the efforts here in San Diego and spotlight the heroes working worldwide to care for the species you know and love.
Listen to Amazing Wildlife on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.